think I'm on a pedestal. All right, I have a question. How long do I have? Don't ring the bell when I'm like in the middle of something really like emotional. Seriously, will somebody tell me when I'm supposed to stop? Like 10 till? Oh my God. I can do all of that, actually. Thanks, Larry. I want to thank you very much for asking me to share. It's been a long time since I spoke at a meeting. And somebody said this week, and they're all giving me a bad time because I'm speaking here, that I'm not nervous at all. Yeah, right. On November 1st of 1988, God brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, mostly against my will. Didn't really want to be here. Didn't really want to stop drinking. Actually never gave it a thought in spite of the consequences. When I got here, I thought I was still having fun. And you'll find out what that looks like in a minute. it was quite something. I come from a family of no alcoholics. There's not an alcoholic in my family. My parents went to church and took me to church before I was born. I don't have one cousin. My mother had 12 brothers and sisters and 20,000 nieces and nephews, and none of them drank. And my dad had 6 brothers and sisters and just as many nieces and nephews, and none of them drank. So there you go. Kind of weird. I didn't see anybody drink when I was little. I don't have any drinking experiences when I was young. Except in high school, there were people that drank, and they were like the weird people. They went across the street to Willie's drive-in at lunch and smoked cigarettes, and you know. And I looked down on them. I was a good girl. The one thing I do remember about my childhood, though, was I absolutely 100% believe that I was either adopted or I came from another planet because I did not fit in. Everything they wanted me to do, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to go to church. I didn't want to be good. I didn't want to do any of that. But I was absolutely full of fear all my whole entire life. I was afraid of my parents. I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of other people. What I thought was shy. I suppose that's what they call it. And so I was always afraid. I never felt like I got along with anybody. I would go to church with these young people and try to be with them, and they were all happy, you know, and having a good time. And I just didn't get it. I just, like, watched them, and I thought, wow, they're weird. So it was not an easy way to live life full of terror, you know, afraid of everything. And if I had found alcohol a lot earlier, I think it would have probably been really good for me. But who knows? Anyway, Sam's making me really nervous. Sorry. I hated where I lived. At 18, I hated my parents. I was really afraid of them. I needed to get out. And get away from them because they kept telling me I couldn't bowl on Sundays or go swimming on certain days, and it was really kind of like legalistic, and I really needed to get out of there because I wanted to have fun. I wanted to go to movies and dances and all of that. And so I snuck out of the house and learned how to lie, told my parents I was going places. I was constantly grounded, always grounded, for 2 weeks, and then I would go out and do it again, and it didn't really make any difference. I met this guy in high school. I thought this was going to be the answer. I married him, and I woke up one day about 2 months into my marriage and found out I married my parents, only in one person. So I didn't do myself any good, okay? It was really weird. Like, he was just like them. I don't know how that happened, but it was very strange. And one day, I had had my first son. I was really naive about everything, and I was still full of fear. And not making very good decisions, and didn't know how to raise a kid, and had some friends that moved close to us, and we went to, they had a kid, and we were living in Long Beach, and we wanted to have a party, and they had drank before, and so, you know, it was none of us were 21, and not any of us. We had kids, but we weren't 21. And so we decided we were going to buy a bottle. And somehow this is, I'm always the designated something through this whole story. I was the designated buyer for some reason. So I went into what was called Lucky's at the time, and I bought about 10 bottles of baby food and a bottle of vodka. And I got in line, and I thought, if I buy baby food, they're not going to ask me if I'm old enough to buy the vodka, right? And I did that, and they didn't card me. And it was the strangest night of my life, actually. I think I was 18. It's hard for me to remember. It's been a long time. And I remember that I took my first drink, and everything changed for me. It was an instantaneous shift in my perception about who I was, how I felt about myself, the terror and fear that I had lived with all those years where I was just controlled by it, completely vanished in one instant, in a second, in a flash. Amazing. And the next thing I know, well, I don't remember anything very much after that, which is some indication of how I drank. I'm sure that I finished most of that bottle. I couldn't tell you for sure because I don't remember. I blacked out probably after the first or second drink. I have no idea. I remember that my husband picked me up off the floor and carried me home, and I told him, you know, please don't ever let me do that again, because I had to lie about it. But really, I really wanted to do was always drink. You know, he wasn't real happy with me that night, and that continued for a long time. Because he didn't like to drink. He only drank because that was what we did on weekends. So I had another child. It all started out with weekends, you know, and mainly because he controlled my drinking because I was enjoying it way too much. That's just how it was. He counted my drinks, and it was not good. And the more I drank, the more I wanted to drink, and the less I wanted him to control my drinking. And so things got really bad between us, and I lived in a small town. And I would go to the bar, and he would come there, and I'd see him walk in the front door, and I would yell at him, and we'd walk in the parking lot, and there'd be a screaming match because he wanted me to go home and take care of his kids and do his laundry, and I didn't want to do any of that. I wanted a drink. And we had some times now, and they were pretty interesting. And the whole town knew about us. There was only 12,000. He would chase me down Main Street. It was just really cool. And the best solution I had for that was, like, I had to get rid of this guy. He had to go. He was there with, that's just not going to happen. You know, no way, you know. And, you know, kind of the sad part, that's funny, but the sad part is that not only did he have to go, but so did the kids, you know. And that's the sad part about the whole story, you know, is if he had to go, so did the kids, because I wasn't going to take care of him. I left and got drunk for the first time for 5 days straight and didn't breathe a sober moment. And things got worse from there, you know. When I got single, I found, I'm going to date myself. Drinking was really a problem for me. I would take a drink and I would wake up in my house and I didn't know how I got there. That's a problem. And I didn't like it, you know. I liked it that I didn't know what I did, because it was really cool to be blacked out. I don't know about you. I love blackouts because you could just do anything you wanted. It was just like, whoa, freedom. The problem is that it's kind of a bad situation when you wake up in your own bed and you have no idea how you got there, and obviously you drove home. It's not a good thing. And so what I found out was you can like have enhancements to help you drink so you don't black out. That's a really good discovery for me. And it started with what they called in the trucker language crosstops. It was awesome. And just like everything else, you know, I'd start with one or two, and then finally I was taking them so much that I ended up like really sick with a bladder infection, because if you like overdo the little crosstops, you get really sick. Your body can't take that, you know. And, of course, I'm drinking, like, a ton with these things because you can drink and not black out. It was a miracle. I loved it. So I did that, and so then I remember when I was little, they used to say, don't smoke pot because it's the progressive. It's just going to, it's the gateway, you know, like, don't, and I would think, whatever. Well, I wasn't ever going to drink and do drugs anyway, because I was a good girl. Anyway, and then my whole story is like which guy had what drug, kind of. Sorry, Mike, I love you. but I do have a past. So I hooked up with this other guy. He had an unlimited amount of marijuana. And I found out that I could smoke marijuana and go to work and drink on the weekends. And it wasn't really about the marijuana so much as it was about, like, the drinking, you know. And it was really about, like, how can I get away with always being, like, altered and still kind of function? Because I kind of functioned a little bit. I got worse at the end, of course. So, you know, I'd keep these jobs. I'd smoke pot. I'd, you know, in the morning and when I go to lunch, and then I drank when I got home, and it was just like whatever I could do to stay high enough so I could drink. That's just was the whole thing. It's just I just got to drink. That's all I could do, and it's all I ever wanted to do. I progressed from him with the pot to the guy with the coke. So I dumped the pot guy for the coke guy. Because you have to do that, you know. And I tried the two of them at one day, and that didn't work. And coke was a lot better. Sorry, I know this is AA, but it was all about drinking, truly. I mean, my story has all the drug parts, but it was, what can I do to drink and not black out and stay drunk all the time? That's like the goal, isn't it? Right? And whatever you have to do that, because I was not a good drinker. You know, drink, I didn't know if I was going to drink one and pass out or drink 10 and pass out. And I never knew where I was going to end up, ever. It was ridiculous. And I was always causing problems. So I hooked up with a coke guy, and, you know, and it was all, and you know, a part of my story is also this. It's really good to always hang out with people that do more than you do, because then you're not the problem. It's the perfect solution. And, you know, like, he was a mess. He had two drunk drivings. You know, he was going to the SR22 classes drunk on his butt every Saturday, and I was the driver. It was stupid. You know, it's like, okay, we got to go to this class, and I can't drive because I don't have a driver's license. So we drink and use all night long, get in the car, I drive him to his drunk driving classes drunk. And he's drunk on his butt. That's crazy. Do I qualify yet? I'm not sure. There's a little bit more to the story. So things are getting really crazy because there's unlimited amount of the enhancement available. And it's not enough. And I'm still drinking. You know, I would buy my favorite drink was White Russians. So I would buy a big bottle of the stuff. I can't remember what it was anymore. They're like Kahlua, thank you, whoever you are. And a gallon of vodka and some milk. And you know, like when they serve you at the bar, do you know how big the glasses are? That big. Well, mine were this big. That's how big they were. And I would drink that all night long. And I would drink all of that in one night. And then have to go to the store the next day when they opened. You know what I'm saying? So, it was crazy. And anywhere we went, I was a designated drunk driver. That was my lot in life, I think. It was crazy. I would always drive, and I was always drunk, just the way it was. And so one day, also I worked for the dude. Stupid. And one day I was, he was really mean when he was sober. I don't know if you said that. My goal is to keep him as drunk as possible all the time. Problem was, he didn't always want to do that. It was not a good situation. And I worked for him. One day I was supposed to go to the bank, and I was in my little sports car, and it was the middle of the afternoon. I had unlimited gas to put in the car, but I forgot to fill it up because I've been loaded for 5 days. And so I ran out of gas. And I lived in the San Joaquin Valley in the Visalia area. I don't know if anybody knows where that is, but the summers are 115 degrees. So I ran out of gas. He took 2 hours to come and put gas in my car, and I'm sitting in this car just roasting, and I'm furious. And then at the end, when he brings the gas and he puts the gas in my car, he tells me I have to take the little gas thing in my car, and that's enough for me. I've had it with it. I'm just furious. So I get in my car to go, and I'm going up the overpass to get on the freeway, and I kind of look back to give him one more, like, you know what? And I lost control of the car, and I hit the berm, and it flew straight up in the air. And it came straight down like this, and I don't remember because I blacked out. My car hit down. I was thrown out of the roof of the car. My car ended up on the freeway. I ended up on the hill, and I was on a 90-degree angle, and both my legs were broken. My thighs. And you know, the thing about this is, you know, like, I really was convinced the persistence of the illusion is astonishing, because at this point, I mean, I'm getting to the end here, and I'm drunk more than I am sober, and I'm gumming macaroni and cheese like every 4 days just to keep so I can swallow, and it's just a bad situation. But I still think I got stuff going on. I thought, wow, you know, this is the life. It's insane. You know, I'm thinking, wow, you know, I got this little sports car, you know, and I'm high, I got all the coconut, we got, And I remember at one point that we had a volatile relationship, to say the least, and I would leave him and drive home, and in those moments, I would think, how am I ever going to get out of this? But it was just a fleeting thought. I didn't really want to, you know, but there was something inside of me, and I know that's God today. But I prayed to God the prayer that we all pray, God, help me. But he didn't help me right away. You know, it wasn't instantaneous. I think he knew I needed to get a few more knocks before it was time and I would really want to be here. So I let go of the steering wheel when that happened, and the first thought I thought when I was flying up in the air is, thank God it's finally over, which is kind of amazing because I think I'm still, like, cool and things are okay. But the thought was, this is it, and I'm glad because I'm done. I can't take it anymore. But, you know, darn it, I woke up and I had two broken legs. I mean, it's not a fun place to be. They haul me to the hospital. The doctor said, do you drink? Oh, yeah, I have two occasionally. That's standard answer. I'm never going to admit that I drink, ever. I'm not. You know, it's a secret, I think. I'm certainly not going to voice it. I know people know it, but I don't care. Truly. I got out. You'd think, you know, maybe I would see that there's some drinking issues going on here, but no, I don't not attach the two to the... I'm having a string of bad luck here. You know? And my luck's going to change any minute, right? So I go. My car's done. I move in with my mother. It's horrible. 2 weeks later, after I get out of the hospital, I'm with that guy again, doing it all over. About... Let's see. That was in July... And then in May of that year, I went and took a truck from my ex-boyfriend in the middle of the day and didn't tell him. So that was my next car. My cars got progressively worse through the whole situation as well. So I took the truck. I was making the payments on it anyway, so it belonged to me, right? So that next May, same thing, big weekend. We're going to go somewhere, do something. We think we have enough for the night. I don't know if you've ever thought you had enough for the night. That was a constant delusion as well. We have enough for the night. Because we'd always hide the beer. That was the last, like, nut thing in the refrigerator and the butter thing. But somehow that got done, too. You know, so, like, all night long, we're running out of booze, and the designated drunk driver has to go to town. That's me, because we're going to leave, and so we got to stock up again. So I get in the truck, and I go to town. I buy it all. It's in my truck. I run a red light, and a lady hits me. And this time, I break my bone below my knee and my hip, my pelvis, and I have a black eye. I'm on the front news of the paper one more time, less than a year later, with blood all over me. It's insane. And so the ambulance come. They say, we're going to take you to the hospital. I say, absolutely not. I'm not going back to that place again. I had a resentment against the hospital because they wouldn't give me as much morphine as I wanted. So like, I'm not going there again. Sorry. They're not doing it my way. So I do kind of crawl in there. They take me to the hospital. I call the guy. He comes and gets me, and I leave. And I don't know how badly I'm injured. I wake up the next day. I cannot get up out of bed. I can't get out of bed. He picks me up, puts me in my car, and takes me to my house where I'm supposed to be living, which I don't. 3 days later, I call my mom because I can't walk, and she takes me to the hospital, and they give do x-rays and find out that my pelvis is broken and my leg is broken. And, you know, it's just, and I'm not going to stop drinking. I'm not even thinking about stopping drinking, even now. Not doing it. No way. There's just something about alcohol that helps me more than anything else, and I'm not giving up no matter what. I'm just not. And I have to tell you that because for me it wasn't like I have to get sober. It was God intervening in my life to get me here because I didn't want to come here. I didn't want to get sober. I really had a vision of being old and being drinking till I died. Although I probably wouldn't have made it the way I was going. And so months later, he got sober. Ew. Ew. It's a bad thing. You know, the crashes, the legs, all of that. I'm not giving up. He gets sober, and I'm like, ah, what am I going to do? Stupid. I hate that wimpy bottom. I wish I could change that part, but I'm not going to drink to do it, so you got to take it for what it is. And so I had a friend who watched this whole thing happen, absolutely a servant of God in my life. It suggested a meeting. I thought, what? I don't even know what that is. Why would I go there? And really all I knew, okay, short, cute story about Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard about it once in the small town. Some guy was really bad. He was a lot worse than I was because when he got drunk, he'd take his clothes off and run down Main Street and they'd arrest him. And we would talk about that in the bar after that, and they would tell me he got sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, gee, I'm not that bad. I'll never be that bad. And that's all I knew about y'all. And I thought, So I went and visited one day. I visited. You know, is there anybody here that's a newcomer? Da, 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 da. Is there a visitor? Yeah, that would be me. And they used to sign up. I don't know if I don't see that anymore, but you used to sign your name and there would be three sections, you know, for newcomers and whatever, and then visitors, and I was a visitor. And it was noisy and there were kids there and I didn't like it and it was just, bleh. I don't want to be here. And then he suggested I go again one other night, and he said he would go with me, and he took me. And I haven't had a drink since. Imagine that. And I didn't really not want to not drink. I didn't. And what I know about that is there is a God, and he's a lot bigger than I am, and I'm so glad he makes decisions for me, because I can't make decisions on my own. I have a very bad decision maker. My decision maker is drink full on all the way until I die. That's it. I can't make any other decisions. And everything else that happens to me is just coincidence and crap, because I don't make those decisions. Whatever happens, it just happens. So I go to the meetings. I'm not real happy. I am not a happy newcomer. I'm not happy, joyous, and free at 30 days, believe me. And I'm not in a recovery home there. I didn't know about them. Nobody told me I could check myself in, and I wouldn't go stay with a bunch of women anyway. So you might as well forget that. That's not happening. No way. So I started to go to meetings. I know so little about you guys that I believe that the meeting I have to go to every week is on Thursday night, because that's where I went. I had no idea there were like a zillion thousand meetings. I'm at home alone. I'm working at this turkey egg ranch in Arosa, California. The pit of hell. That's where I ended up. I mean, I worked. I don't know how I did it. And they kept me, and I have no idea why they did, except God was intervening in my life the whole time. Really nice people, you know, but I had every disease known to mankind. And I think my kids broke their arms at least 10 times before I got sober. And they obviously didn't keep track, because they didn't fire me. I was lucky to show up on Wednesdays if I did. It was amazing. And I still had that pathetic job when I got sober. And I love them. Thank you. I mean, that was awesome that they kept me. So I would go to, so I had this pathetic little job. I lived in this house that had no furniture in it, because most of my stuff was in my car. And I called my buddy and I said, and I'm crazy. I am out of my mind, insane, insane. Without a doubt. I can't tell you. I didn't sleep for 6 months. I tell you, I was awake all night long. I didn't sleep. And I called him up and I said, you know, like, this is really getting hard for me, because if I have to wait till Thursday night to go to these meetings, I'm going to drink. It's that simple. And he goes, oh, you can go to any meeting anytime you want to go. That was new to me. It was like, really? So there was an Alano club. It was always open. There were a bunch of tattooed biker guys there, and I was like, ooh, I'm still real judgmental. Like, I don't belong there, but I could go anytime. And I hooked up with a couple of chicks in AA that were a little bit older in sobriety than me, and we formed a pack, the three of us, and we started to go to meetings all the time. When I wasn't working, I was in a meeting. That's what I did, because I was crazier than a loon. I'm serious. I was absolutely insane. I did not know. I didn't want to live that way. I don't even know how I stayed sober. I do know God kept me sober, because I wanted to drink really bad most of the time. And it's only because of the grace of God that I did it, because that's really what I wanted to do. I don't think about it very often, so it's hard to put it into words, but I cried at every meeting. I was the biggest whiner and complainer in Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't tell me they were sick of me, but I knew they were sick of me. I was just like, wah! You know, it was just bad. It was bad. And, but I kept going, and I know that God did that for me. I went to meetings like 25 miles away from my house. I would get up on Saturday and be gone all day, go to Denny's, have coffee. That's really where you, like, hear it, and that's where they tell you the truth. Not that you don't get it in meetings, but when you sit across from somebody and they tell you get a God or die, you kind of get the idea that maybe you're in trouble. And I'm not having nothing to do with him. Sorry. Mostly because I know he's not having nothing to do with me. there's no way that God is going to care for me. And the whole time that I'm thinking that, he's like taking care of me, and I don't even know it. And that's the amazing thing about AA, I think. I would go by the corner where, and when I would drive home at night, I would drive by that corner where that little bar was, and my car always wanted to turn there, but somehow I always went home and went to bed even though I didn't sleep. The guy that told me to come to meetings, he gave me speaker tapes. I would cue it for at night because I know I would fall asleep for 2 hours, and then I would wake up alone at home and I would be terrified, and I would just punch that button and have it ready for me, you know, to hear and be with me. I needed something to just be there because I was crazy. I stayed sober. I found out that I have to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, well, you know, I can do probably most of those, but I'm never going to do 9. Never. And I would stand at the podium and I would whine all the whole time. I don't know who to ask for to be my sponsor. And I can't get a sponsor. And then they gave me 2. One of them had me buy cigarettes for her and didn't know how to work the steps. That didn't work very good. I finally got smart enough to get rid of her because she wasn't paying me back for her cigarettes. It pissed me off. I didn't think, and I kind of figured out that wasn't what a sponsor was supposed to be like necessarily. And then finally one day this lady walked up to me. She was like probably 15 years younger than me, and she had tattoos all over her, and I judged her from 1 minute to the next. And she said, shut up, I'm going to be your sponsor. You're going to do exactly what I say. And I thought, okay. But what could you possibly teach me, right? Anyway, she was amazing. She was amazing. We worked the steps together. I was sort of spurred on. I'm a little competitive. One of the girls that I was sober with, she got her 4-step done, and I wasn't done yet. That didn't set well with me. I became Miss AA, by the way. I do things all the way or no way. That's just who I am. I drink all the way, and when I got to AA, I was running them down, man. I would travel the roads, and I would see somebody I drank with, and I would stop my car, and I'd run in there, and I'd say, you got to go to AA. He wasn't even an alcoholic. But I knew he needed help, and I was hauling him in every day. It was amazing. And I found out she did her 4-step. It was 80 pages, she told me. I thought, oh, my God. How am I ever going to write 80 pages of a 4-step? And I thought, I'm never going to do that, but I got to do it because she's already done. Got to hurry. I went to see this little girl, and she showed me her 4-step. It was a steno pad, front and back, 6 pages long. And I thought, okay, that's manageable. I'll try that. So I wrote my 4-step. And we actually got on our knees in her house and prayed the 3rd step. It was real icky. But I did it. Which only tells me that, like, I don't have a desire to stop drinking. I really don't want to do the 4-step, and I'm not crazy about the steps. But guess what? I'm sober. There's something out there helping me that I don't know about yet, okay? So I wrote my 4-step. I go to her. I read my 5th step. It happened for me. The promises worked. I really felt, for the first time in my life, here's what happens during the 4-step. I think it's all your fault, and it will always be your fault. Just the way it is. It's never my fault. And it says we put aside the faults of others. I don't know. That is like a huge statement to me. It's teeny, and it's in the book, in the 4-step. We put aside the fault, away the faults of it. I'm not going to quote it. Don't. You talk to me. We put aside the faults of others and we look at ourselves. And for the first time in my life, I found out how extremely, incredibly selfish, self-centered, and dishonest and full of fear I am. And you would think that that would be a really bad revelation, but it was like cathartic for me. It was like, I get it. It was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah, that's me. I never did one thing for one other human being, parents, kids, friends, anybody, that didn't have something in it for me. It's all about me. I'm going to do it for me. And that's just the way it is. And when I found out that was who I really was, it changed my life. I finally was able to say, I'm responsible. I'm the one. I get to change me. And if I firmly believe that if that hadn't happened for me, I wouldn't have had the power to stay sober. That is totally a God thing. God's in the steps. There's no doubt about it. Because most people don't really want to know that they're really selfish to the extreme. But I love that. It was a revelation. And I walked out of her house a free woman. Because I knew finally that maybe something could help me and I wouldn't have to live that life of terror for the rest of my life. I wasn't real good yet, but I was getting better through that process. I did my sixth and seventh, just like she said. I took the hour, did it exactly like it says in the book. I wrote my eighth. I went to my kids and my parents, and I told them that I was wrong. And, of course, they forgive you. I mean, that's just too much for me. I didn't want that. I wanted them to tell me that I needed to do something to make it better. But it was like, don't worry, you know, it's okay. You know, just stay sober. Because my kids watched me with the broken legs in the hospital. They came and visited me, and it was very, very hard. And then to see them, like see their mom get sober, was an amazing thing. And today I have a wonderful relationship with my kids and my grandkids. So I went and made amends, which I wasn't going to do. Remember I said, no way, I'm not doing that. And I did most of my ninth step, my sobriety is awesome, okay? There were three things that this person that I did my ninth step with, that she told me I didn't have to, like, make amends for those three things. I still stayed sober, so don't. It was weird. Anyway, I moved to Hawaii when I was a year sober. I got a job there. I eventually went to school there. I got my BA there. I sponsored a gazillion people because they don't know how to work the steps in Hawaii. Don't tell anybody that. Is there anybody here from Hawaii? Whoops. So, really cool. Lived there. I had a great time, graduated, got my BA in political science, applied to law school, didn't get accepted in Honolulu, applied here in San Diego and a couple other places in California. And I really didn't want to come back. Hawaii was really a nice place, but I was kind of getting sick of it at that point. I don't know. Moved to San Diego, plopped myself, God moved me into an apartment close to a men's recovery home. But I didn't know that at the time, okay? I didn't pick it because it was there. It just sort of picked me, right? Started law school. Came to San Diego with six boxes to my name. It's a truly amazing story. Moved into that apartment. Called AA Central the day that I was here the first day, and I said, where's the meeting? And they said, 1 o'clock at Pathfinders. Yeah. I love Pathfinders. Anyway, walked there that first day and got called on, hung out there, saw a guy I really liked. I hadn't been married since I divorced that guy that was keeping me from drinking. Didn't really ever want to get married. I was going to go to law school and be a career woman, do AA, have a life, right? And then I met my wonderful husband, Mike, and our first date was a beach walk and a meeting at Cass Street. He always tells me he's going to take me to the chicken pie shop for my first date, so I guess that was a treat. Anyway, no, it was wonderful. It was cool, and we got married, and life is not what I expected. You know, it's just I never ever, my dreams were way too little for what I actually have. You know, I mean, I was really like shooting for the bottom, and I got like the top of everything. You know, it's, there's no doubt about that. I remained prejudiced in Alcoholics Anonymous against God for a long time. I used AA for almost 13 years of my sobriety. And one day I hit a turning off point where I needed to. It's like when you drink and you try to stop and you can't. There was a behavior in my life that I thought I could control, and I used every step of Alcoholics Anonymous on this behavior, and nothing worked for me. I had to seek outside help to find a God bigger than me to take care of me in those areas of my life that AA wasn't helping me out. No reflection on Alcoholics Anonymous, but you have, I took that option. I needed desperate help, and I didn't know how to do it. And I'm grateful to AA that I was here long enough, that God kept me here long enough so that I could actually not be prejudiced anymore. And it has a lot to do with, like, pain, extreme pain, and where I became willing to do anything. I didn't care what it was to get rid of the pain, and I didn't want to drink, and I was afraid that I might. And I took his suggestion, and I went back to church. I believe that God found me one more time. I believe he found me and brought me here, and I believe he found me and took me there. Today I have a wonderful relationship with a creator that's so big that I can't even comprehend it. I need that because the God I make up hates all the people I hate. Not good. I got to have somebody that thinks different than me, okay? It's really important. And he holds me to a standard that that I love. And that, and what really, I buy everything 100%. You know, and this is not something that I can, that I have to quarrel with. It's all written down. It's everything I need. I don't have to, like, think about it or try to make it different. It's just all there for me, and I like it that way. It's sort of like AA. It's all there. It's all there. That's it. You know, I didn't have to think, well, how can I make that different, and how can I make that work for me? It's not, you don't have to. It's, you just do it. That's all you do. I gave my life to the old religion that I thought I'd never go back to. And not because I did that out of choice one more time, like I didn't choose to come here. It was out of sheer pain and desperation that I did that. And it's been a wonderful blessing in my life, comfort and joy that I never thought I could get. And I'm so grateful that God loves me in spite of who I am, and now you know who I am, and that he could still love me after the, all of that is an amazing thing. And he's with me all the time. All right, so I'm not a lawyer, so don't come and ask me for any advice. I'll just make that clear right away. If you come and ask me, I'll just ask you one question. Are there any damages? I didn't pass the bar, but it doesn't matter because God had other plans for me. Today, my husband and I run our own business. We have more than we even need or could ever ask for. We're blessed beyond our wildest dreams. And all of that is really cool, but it means nothing without peace inside my heart. I'll tell you what, I'm sort of like one of those crying persons again. We've had some really tough, you know, I always thought I had tough times in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I can't remember one of them, you know. I'm just this drama queen. Something happens and I think the world is over. Oh, what am I going to do? But if I had to go back right now and tell you what those are, I couldn't even name them if you asked me to, because they're all just like crap. Okay, it just doesn't make any difference. But, you know, we have had tragedy in our lives this year, and without that God I was telling you about, I wouldn't be sober today. You know, things that I would have never dreamed could happen have happened. And not one time during all of those things, and there's a lot of them, we lost our niece who was 24 in a drunk driving accident. Tragic. And our family hasn't recovered yet from it. And it's just been a hard road. And the only comfort I have is a power that loves me beyond my wildest dreams, and I can go to him for help. And you know what I know about that, too, today is, like, in these times that are tough for us, I can't even go to him. He just comes to me and takes care of me, and I don't even know it until it's over. And that's what's truly amazing. And it's all everybody's experience. That's my experience, you know. Mike's son is in Afghanistan. It's hard, you know. It's hard. I had no idea what it would be like. Harder for my husband than it is for me, but hard for me because I see my husband in pain every day. It's really hard. But there's comfort, you know. We have comfort, and the amazing part about that is that Alcoholics Anonymous. It's really amazing because there's not a drinking thought to be had here. We couldn't drink even if we would. It says that in the book, and that is truly true. At least, and I watch my husband, and I see that in his life, and I know it is for mine. You know, when I get beyond anything I can do, I go into my little room, and I take my little readings, and I pray to God every day. And I ask him to take it all and to take care of me and my family, you know, and heal us, you know. And just when I think it's over, something else happened. My dad got sick with pneumonia before Christmas, and he died in less than a month. And there's more to be told even. I mean, I have so many things right now that are just, like, coming in waves and waves and waves. But the joyous thing about that is that I know a drink isn't going to help any of that. And I want to face it. And I want to feel it. And I want to, like, get closer to my God over it. That's my desire. You know, we seek through prayer and meditation to have a conscious contact. And that's what's saving me right now for all the things that are happening to me. There's no drink to be had here. I don't want to drink. It's hard. It hurts. But I don't want to drink. That's a miracle. Because when I got here, that's all I wanted to do. That's all I wanted to do. And today, that's nothing that I ever want to do again. And I do believe in long-term sobriety. I do. I have to have that in my life. I believe in it. I believe that God would not let me drink even if I wanted to. He brought me here. He kept me here when I didn't want to stay. And I know that a drink is never going to help me. I love you, Mike. And I love you all, and I'm glad you all were here when I needed you, and I'm glad that you asked me to speak, and don't buy the CD, thanks.